Hello, this is Ian with the commercial news, dated Wednesday, September 9th, 2020. We'll start our reading today, as we usually do, on the front page of the paper. Today, with the article, Back to Class, District 118 to Discuss New Year, by Carol Rome, Danville. Danville District 118 school board members tonight we'll discuss how plans are going for the 2020-2021 school year. Superintendent Alicia Geddes said she will give the board an update on how the first day of school on Tuesday went. She said Chromebooks have been distributed to second through fourth grade students who opted to participate in remote learning. The district, however, is still waiting on a Chromebook order to come in for kindergarten and first grade students in remote learning. Meal distribution also began Tuesday for remote learning students and will continue to take place every Tuesday. Meals are to be picked up using the student's barcode meal ID at one of the following schools and times: Danville High School at 202 East Fairchild Street, 10 to 11 a.m., or 5 to 6 p.m. Mark Denman Elementary School at 930 Colfax Street, 5 to 6 p.m. Southview Upper Elementary School at 133 East 9th Street from 5 to 6 p.m. or North Ridge Middle School at 1619 North Jackson Street from 5 to 6 p.m. Also tonight, the board will consider the reappointment of Buildings and Grounds Director Skip True to the Danville Public Building Commission for a 5-year period ending in September of 2025. They will consider entering into a contract for $78,000 so K-12 Elevate may provide a certified bilingual and ESL staff member to work with North Ridge Middle School and Danville High School students remotely. The district has been unable to fill two bilingual teacher positions and an English as a second language teacher position that would provide sufficient bilingual and ESL services as required by the Title III grant. A position at DHS that has been posted for 3 years yet remains unfilled. A bilingual certified substitute who previously met the needs of the students is no longer in the area. A full-time bilingual teacher at Northeast Elementary Magnet School left at the end of the year, as did a shared bilingual teacher at Mark Denman and Southwest Elementary Schools. The vacancies create a compliance issue for the district with the Title III grant. Internal moves were made this school year to cover the ESL openings at the elementary schools. However, it created an ESL opening at North Ridge Middle School. The district's Title III state consultant verified that using K-12 Elevate would allow the district to remain compliant and appropriately serve North Ridge and DHS students during remote learning. While using K-12 Elevate, the job postings will remain active as the search for certified instructors in these areas continue. Our next article will be County Reports 11 New COVID Cases, a staff report. Danville. The Vermilion County Health Department reported 11 new cases of COVID-19 today. That brings the total number of positive cases to 382. Of the 11, one is in his or her 80s, two in their 70s, two in their 60s, one in their 50s, one in their 30s, three in their 20s, and one teen. Two of the cases reported share a household. The county also is reporting 21,107 negative tests, according to Public Health Administrator Doug Toole. Meanwhile, the Illinois Department of Public Health announced 1,392 new confirmed cases of coronavirus disease in Illinois, including seven additional confirmed deaths. The deaths are in Clinton, Cook, Jackson, Montgomery, and Williamson counties. Currently, IDPH is reporting a total of 252,353 cases, including 8,186 deaths, in 102 counties in Illinois. The age of cases ranges from younger than 1 to older than 100 years old. The preliminary 7-day statewide positivity for cases as a percent of total tests from September 1st through 7th is 4%. Within the past 24 hours, laboratories have reported 31,363 specimens for a total of 4,478,710. As of Monday night, 1,504 people in Illinois were reported to be in the hospital with COVID-19. Of those, 343 patients were in the ICU, and 133 patients with COVID-19 were on ventilators. Following guidance from the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, IDPH is now reporting separately both confirmed and probable cases and deaths on its website. Reporting probable cases will help show the potential burden of COVID-19 illness and efficacy of population-based non-pharmaceutical interventions. IDPH will update these data once a week. For health questions about COVID-19, call the hotline at 800-889-3931 or email dph.sick@illinois.gov. Finishing out the front page, we'll go to the article, Mentors Help People Achieve Financial Goals, a staff report, Danville. If you've always had a goal of getting your finances in shape, it's not too late. More than 80 people received help managing their personal finances by working with Money Mentors volunteers from the Illinois University of Illinois Extension in the past year. The program is a network of trained volunteers who work one-on-one with individuals who request help with personal money management. Mentors are available to meet with participants online or by phone. In the past year, people moved forward with their financial goals, including organizing their finances, paying down debt, and increasing savings. The breadth and value of people's accomplishments while participating in Money Mentors always astounds me, said Kathy Swedler, consumer economics educator of the Illinois Extension. Last year, participants worked with Money Mentors to accomplish goals like these: worked to align income and expenses after divorce, developed a budget, developed a plan to save for child's college, eliminated credit card debt, increased long-term savings for retirement and other purposes. Recently, 21 more community members graduated from the Money Mentors training program. Over 12 weeks, mentors in training met by Zoom and completed online assignments, discussions, and quizzes. A total of more than 30 hours of training. This first graduating online class included people from Champaign, Kankakee, Piatt, and Vermilion counties. The next training class for mentors is in January. The Money Mentors program is based in 10 Illinois counties, including Champaign and Vermilion. Local consumer economics educators provide continuing education and assistance to the Money Mentors volunteers. The pandemic has created challenges for the Money Mentors program. In the past, most mentor meetings have been in person. Since mid-March, all mentor meetings have switched to either phone, email, or online. We're pleased to be able to continue to provide helpful financial education and coaching during this extraordinary time, Sweetler said. One participant had this to say about her mentor. I truly think the time we spent with you has helped us immensely. Our budgets are working well. We're getting things in even better shape and paying off debts. We have automatic transfers and spreadsheets that make us more comfortable making large purchases. Thank you so much for all your time and assistance. I cannot stress enough how helpful our time together was. Illinois Extension leads public outreach for University of Illinois by translating research into action plans that allow Illinois families, businesses, and community leaders to solve problems, make informed decisions, and adapt to changes and opportunities. Learn more at extension.illinois.edu. If you'd like to meet with a Money Mentors volunteer, register at go.illinois.edu/moneymentors or call 217-333-7672. All mentor meetings are free and confidential. If you will need an accommodation in order to participate, please include this information in your registration. Early requests are strongly encouraged to allow sufficient time to meet your access needs. We'll now go to the death notices. Rava Elaine Holy Cross, 85, of Perrysville, Indiana, passed away on September 6th. A celebration of Rava's life will take place at 11 a.m. on Wednesday, September 9th, at Sunset Funeral Home and Cremation Center in Danville. Visitation will be held prior to the service from 9 to 11 a.m. at the funeral home. Burial will take place at Danville National Cemetery. Memorial donations may be made in Rava's name to the VA Eliana Healthcare System in Danville. Lonnie Jean Phipps, 70, of Williamsport, Indiana, passed away on September 6th. Visitation will be at Grady Funeral Home in West Lebanon, Indiana, on Thursday, September 10th, from 3 p.m. Eastern until time of service at 5 p.m. Eastern. Robert L. Bob Hatfield, 76, of Hoopston, passed away on Friday, September 4th. Visitation will be held from 4 to 7 p.m. on Tuesday, September 8th, at Anderson Funeral Home. A private family funeral service will be held with a public graveside service at 11:15 a.m. on Wednesday, September 9th, at East Lynn Cemetery in East Lynn. Memorials may be made to the Hoopston United Methodist Church in Hoopston. Raymond F. Shorty Ellis, 93, of Westville, passed away on Saturday, September 5th. Funeral service, 12 noon on Wednesday, at Robinson Chapel in Catlin. Burial with military honors by Westville American Legion will follow at the Georgetown Cemetery in Georgetown, Illinois. Visitation will be from 10 a.m. until service time on Wednesday at Robeson Chapel. Memorials may be made in his memory to the Westville Church of Christ. Keith Flesher, 92, of Danville, passed away on September 6th. A celebration of life service and graveside service will be held at 1 p.m. on Thursday, September 10th, at Sunset Memorial Park in Danville. Memorials may be made in Keith's memory to the charity of the donor's choice. Patrick Lee Harrington, 52, of Danville, passed away on August 20th. A celebration of life will be held on Saturday, September 12th at 3 p.m. Central at the United Methodist Church in Perrysville, Indiana. Memorials may be made to the family for the College Education Fund for his daughter, Maddie. William E. Bill Hunt, of Sun City, Arizona, formerly of Danville, died on September 2nd. A specific date for a memorial service has not been set due to the COVID-19 pandemic. In lieu of cards and flowers, the family requests memorials be made to the Alzheimer's charity. Ralph Lloyd Neacom, 75, of Oakwood, passed away on September 5th. Visitation will be Thursday, September 10th, from 5 to 7 p.m. at Kruger Cone Pave Funeral Home in Danville. Graveside service will be 11 a.m. on Friday, September 11th, at Stearns Cemetery. Walter Carl Butler, 91, formerly of Vetersburg, Indiana, passed away on Sunday, September 6th. Graveside service will be 10 a.m. Central, on Thursday, September 10th, at Danville National Cemetery in Danville, Illinois. Deborah J. Lehman, 62, of Ridge Farm, passed away on Saturday, September 5th. Funeral services will be 12 noon on Thursday, September 10th, at Robeson Chapel in Catlin. Burial in Forest Park Cemetery in Georgetown. Visitation from 10 a.m. to noon on Thursday at Robeson Chapel. Beverly Jean Schultz Calvert passed away on Monday, September 7th. A celebration of life service will be held at 10 a.m. on Saturday, September 12th at Sunset Funeral Home and Cremation Center in Danville. Burial will be in Newtown Cemetery. Visitation will be held on Friday, September 11th from 5 to 7 p.m. Memorials may be made in Beverly's memory to the Alzheimer's Association. Next, we'll go to the article, Pritzker's Highlight Impact of Pandemic Relief Fund by Peter Hancock at the Capital News, Illinois, Springfield. Governor J.B. Pritzker and his sister, Penny Pritzker, announced Tuesday that a private fund that was formed to provide relief to communities hit hard by the COVID-19 pandemic will wind down its operations after making its fifth and final round of grants. Pritzker named his sister, a former U.S. Secretary of Commerce in the Obama administration, to head up the Illinois COVID-19 Response Fund in March, just days after issuing his first statewide stay-at-home order in the early days of the pandemic. The fund has been operated by United Way of Illinois and the Alliance of Illinois Community Foundations, and it answered the call when our state needed it most, and before the federal government had begun to help, Governor Pritzker said during a news conference in Chicago. When the family bills couldn't be paid, when people were trying to find connectivity for work and school, when pictures of empty grocery stores went viral on social media and paychecks were unpredictable, in no time at all, the fund was addressing the need and donors were stepping up. Penny Pritzker said the fund distributed more than $31 million to more than 1,650 organizations and provided more than 7 million meals to the nearly 200,000 families. She said it also gave more than 19,000 families direct cash assistance, including 8,000 families who received utility assistance and 5,250 families who received short-term rental assistance. When my brother first asked me to chair this effort, frankly, we did not know what was ahead of us, Penny Pritzker said. We did not understand the duration or the impact of the pandemic. We did not have a team, a timeline, money, infrastructure, a plan, or even a name. We just knew there was such a vast and immediate need throughout the state, caused by the COVID-19 crisis. So we started calling for support. In the fifth round of grants, totaling $7.5 million, the fund focused on underserved communities and communities of color that have been disproportionately impacted by the COVID-19 pandemic, particularly in central and southern Illinois. The Pritzkers highlighted three of the fifth round recipients: the Farm Worker and Landscaper Advocacy Project to provide direct cash assistance to Latino community members, the Dream Opportunity Center for a workforce development initiative focusing on Black families and individuals, and Community Health Partnership of Illinois to provide healthcare services in rural communities through a mobile medical unit. Each of these grantees embodies our goals for this round, Penny Pritzker said. They're already doing critical work in their communities, and we hope that our grants from the Illinois COVID Relief Fund will be able to amplify their impact today and for the foreseeable future. We'll continue next with the article, 10 Killed by Gunfire Over Weekend, by Sophia Turin at the Associated Press, Chicago. An 8-year-old girl shot in the back was among 10 people killed in gunfire over the Labor Day weekend in Chicago, police said Tuesday, marking the latest deadly holiday weekend in the nation's third-largest city. More than 50 people were shot from Friday until just before midnight Tuesday, during a year where violent crime has soared in Chicago and other big U.S. cities. But the holiday weekend's shooting death and injury counts weren't as high as recent holiday weekends, and police noted a preceding 2-month decline. We're going to continue, obviously, looking at addressing violence and crime, Police Superintendent David Brown told reporters. We are seeing tenuous progress. It's fragile, obviously, but we're seeing tenuous progress. From July to August, murders dropped 45%, while shooting incidents dropped 15% in the same time frame, police said. The department attributed the drop to tactics started in July, namely adding more officers to higher crime areas. The department has previously made similar deployments to crime hotspots, which experts say can temporarily lower crime, but can be too aggressive. Brown has said this time officers are also involved more in community relations events, such as food drives, an effort he hopes can work long term. The July 4th weekend was particularly bloody, with 17 people killed and at least 70 wounded in gun violence. A 7-year-old girl and a 14-year-old boy were among those fatally shot. Killed over the Labor Day weekend was an 8-year-old girl identified by the Cook County Medical Examiner's Office as DeJore Wilson. The child was in the car with two adults Monday evening on the city's south side when they stopped at a red light and someone in a vehicle behind them opened fire, striking the child, a 31-year-old man, and 30-year-old woman. The child was pronounced dead at a hospital. The adults were severely wounded. Area resident David Johnson told WBBM-TV he heard more than a dozen shots from a block away before he came over and saw the child victim lying on the ground. "It's a tragedy and horrible," he said. Police said the child was not the intended target. While authorities did not pinpoint the motive, they cited an ongoing gang conflict in the area. No one is in custody in connection with the shooting. Wilson is the sixth child, 10 or younger, to be killed in Chicago since late June, according to data compiled by the Chicago Sun-Times. Overall, violent crime has spiked this year in Chicago, a trend that's been mirrored in New York, Philadelphia, and elsewhere. Experts point to multiple reasons, including soaring unemployment, the pandemic, more anger over police brutality. The city has reported 525 homicides so far this year, according to department reports that counts through Sunday. That's compared to 345 in 2019, 399 in 2018, and 473 in 2017, when looking at the same time period. Far more officers have also been shot. Chicago police said 10 officers have been shot this year, compared with one each in 2019 and 2018. Still, city officials were optimistic about the new tactics. "No one's satisfied, no one's taking a victory lap, but we're clearly seeing progress," Mayor Lori Lightfoot said at an unrelated news conference. Next, we'll go to the article. Fires bring more chopper rescues, power shutoffs, from Marcio Jose Sanchez and Christopher Weber at the Associated Press. Shaver Lake, California. Helicopters rescued more people from wildfires Tuesday as flames chewed through bone-dry California after a scorching Labor Day weekend that saw a dramatic airlift of more than 200 people and ended with the state's largest utility turning off power to 172,000 customers trying to prevent more blazes. Three early morning helicopter flights pulled another 35 people from the Sierra National Forest, the California National Guard said. California has already set a record with 2 million acres burned this year, and the worst part of the wildfire season is just beginning. The previous record was set just 2 years ago, and included the deadliest wildfire in state history, which swept through the community of Paradise and killed 85 people. That blaze was started by power lines amid strong winds and tinder-dry conditions. Liability from billions of dollars in claims from that and other fires forced the Pacific Gas and Electric Utility to seek bankruptcy protection. To guard against new disasters, the company last year began preemptive power shutoffs when fire conditions are exceptionally dangerous. For some international news, we'll go to the article, UK blames young adults for spike in virus cases, from Pan Pilas at the Associated Press, London. The British government faced pressure to act fast Tuesday, to keep a lid on daily new coronavirus infections after a sharp spike across the UK that has been largely blamed on party-going young adults disregarding social distancing. Daily new coronavirus infections have risen sharply recently, dipping Tuesday to 2,420 after hitting nearly 3,000 the previous 2 days. The rise is prompting British governments to consider tightening some restrictions, such as reducing the number of people gathering indoors in England from the current limit of 30. Government ministers and scientists took to the airwaves to urge Britons not to let down their guard. "We've been able to relax a bit over the summer, but these latest figures really show us much as people might like to say, 'Oh well, it's gone away,' this hasn't gone away," said Dr. Jonathan Van Tam, the government's deputy chief medical officer. He said while the rise in infections is much more marked among people between 17 and 21, he was concerned about a more general and creeping geographic trend across the UK. "People have relaxed too much," he said. "Now is the time for us to re-engage and realize that this is a continuing threat." The UK has Europe's worst death toll from the virus, with nearly 41,600 deaths within 28 days of testing positive. The actual toll is believed to be far higher, as the government tally does not include those who died without having been tested. The spike in UK cases follows big daily case increases in Spain and France, both of whom have seen rising numbers of COVID-19 patients being hospitalized. Spain saw an average of 8,800 new cases a day over the weekend, and France has been recording more than 5,000 a day. The worry is that the UK will also start seeing increases in virus patients being hospitalized and dying. While young people are less likely to die from this disease, be in no doubt that they still are at risk, Health Secretary Matt Hancock told lawmakers. 6 months after getting infected, some previously fit people are still laid low by chronic fatigue, muscle pain, and breathing difficulties, he said. And finally, for some more local updates, let's go by the community briefs section. In Danville, Arena Panel meets. The Vermilion County Metropolitan Exposition Auditorium and Office Building Authority Events Committee will hold its regular monthly meeting at 5:30 p.m. today at the arena in room 127. Also in Danville, Sparky Songer Ride. The annual Sparky Songer Memorial Ride will begin Saturday at the Vermilion County War Museum at 307 North Vermilion, rain or shine. All vehicles are welcome. This year's ride will be a poker run. Registration will be from 9 to 10:30 a.m., with departure at 11 a.m. Cost is $20 for riders and drivers, and $5 for passengers. That includes admission to the War Museum and a meal at the American Legion Post 210, where the ride ends. All proceeds go to the War Museum. Also in Danville, Costume Day. Curbside Costume Day will be Thursday at the Danville Public Library. Every Thursday from 3 to 5 p.m., Outreach and young adult staff members will dress in fun costumes to hand out curbside deliveries. Call 477-5227 for a pickup. And that's all the time we have for today's reading. This has been Ian with the Commercial News, dated Wednesday, September 9th, 2020. Thanks for joining me today.